You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and KBOO.FM on the web. It's 9:59. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
KBOO FM Portland show that examines the current political divide in America from an Indigenous perspective. Given by myself, Jacqueline Keeler, a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And I always start the show, you know, because the impetus of this was the insurrection on January 6, 2021, you know, which is being rehashed right now daily on hearings today. Another January 6th committee hearing, the third one that is happening at 1 p.m. Eastern. I guess that would make it, let me do the math here, 10 a.m. Happening right now, I guess. So we are looking at, you know, this momentous moment in our history where a former president, he was president at the time, called for supporters to come to D.C. and challenge the election, and they stormed the Capitol. They entered the Capitol. We've seen very frightening video of that recently again, and heard testimony from folks who were battered and beaten by these insurrectionists, and. And so today on American Standoff, we're discussing the Patriot Front and what it means for American democracy. So the militia group they're discussing right now with the committee hearings is the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. But the Patriot Front, of course, really came to our attention again after some events they've held over the past few years since they were founded, last Saturday when police arrested 31 men found inside a U-Haul truck near a Pride event in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And the arrest really raised the specter of a coordinated effort of violence and intimidation. White men from 10 states alleged to be members of the white supremacist group Patriot Front based in Dallas, Texas, were charged with a conspiracy to start a riot. These are misdemeanor charges, but authorities in northern Idaho say they are leaving open the possibility for more criminal charges. Today on American Standoff, and I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler, I'd like to welcome you, we'll examine why this is a threat to democracy and civil society as we know it. I explained in the previous episode, last week's episode, the importance of civil society, and that's not a term that we talk about very much here in the United States because, quite frankly, we've taken it for granted that things would operate under sort of civil law, and the threat of violent overthrow of civil law is a really dangerous thing, and could spell the threat to a lot of other liberties that we enjoy. Ironic, because these militias claim they're fighting for liberties, yet of course their violent rise to power really reduces liberties for all of us. So, on this show, as I say every week, we examine the connections between seemingly disparate events like like this and their origins in white supremacy and the DNA of colonialism and the ongoing occupation of indigenous homelands in the United States. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I am your host. This is a call-in show, so please don't be afraid to call in. And you know, and this is an issue that affects all of us. That that, as I said, reduces the liberty of all of us. And so I would love to hear what you have to say. The number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. So the arrests last week were made a short distance from Coeur d'Alene's Pride celebration after police got a tip that men were seen loading into a U-Haul truck wearing masks, carrying shields, and other riot gear. Police later found at least one smoke grenade. Most of the men came from out of state. I think about 10 of them did. And it is not clear if any had any connection to local far-right groups who were protesting the Pride Festival. So they had a news conference they revealed that all the Patriot frontmen had been released on bail. Coeur d'Alene Police Chief Lee White said his department has been getting death threats, and also he confronted conspiracy theories that are going on. The streets are, Idaho has Northern Idaho has a history of far right politics, and he was trying to put to rest the idea that they were that this was dominant in the community. So good morning. Once again, this is American Standoff, and we're a live talk show, so please do call in. The number is 503-231-8187. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I'd like to also welcome you in my own language, Jacqueline Keeler. My name is Jacqueline Keeler. So I also, in the Navajo way, like to introduce myself and my clans, Kia Ani Nishle. My father is Yankton Sioux, Ihagdamon Dakota. So those are the people I'm born for in the Navajo way. And so I am also a citizen, enrolled citizen of the Navajo Nation. I'd also like to acknowledge that we are broadcasting a show what we now call Portland, Oregon, which is on the ancestral lands of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz, bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kayapuya, Malala, and many other tribes. And once again, the question I ask every episode of American Standoff is that in the more than, we're going on a year and a half now that has passed since January 6, 2021, where we all saw, these Americans storming the Capitol, what have we learned, right, as a nation, as a people? And this week, once again, we are confronted with the violence, with the coordinated attacks on our democracy. I'd like to start this discussion by examining support that far-right militia groups like the Proud Boys enjoyed from former President Trump. So why don't we start with that audio?
Late criticized the vice president for not specifically calling out Antifa and other left-wing extremist groups. But are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
willing
to
do
specifically
that, but
do it? Well,
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. You want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and right
wing.
White supremacists and right wing militia.
Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a
left-wing.
This is a left-wing problem.
White supremacist. Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not militia. That's what FBI director said.
So that was some audio of during the debates and between then President Trump and now and also Biden concerning whether or not Trump should call out the white supremacist groups that support him, like the Proud Boys, and you heard his response, and it was certainly with the testimony being given in the hearings. Now we know that that was certainly read by folks from those groups as being sort of an encouragement to continue to do
as
what they're doing.
To the next.
Sorry, that was okay. And so once again, this is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show, so please do call into the studio if you want to be part of this conversation. The number here is 503-231-8187. And I think that we also, so I'm going to give a bit of a rundown of what's going to happen today, or what is happening right now on the committee, January 6th committee day 3. So the third public hearing will take place this Thursday, today. The hearing was supposed to be scheduled for Wednesday, but was postponed. So it will be starting at now, 10 a.m. Or 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And so according to a statement from Representative Liz Cheney, Republican Wyoming, Thursday's hearing will be focused on former President Donald Trump's efforts to pressure Vice President Michael Pence into refusing to count electoral votes as part of a coordinated effort to undermine the 2020 election. I think we played audio last week of him basically telling Pence that he wouldn't like him, that he wouldn't be his friend anymore if he didn't destroy democracy. So there will be four main sections of the third hearing. The first will explore the theory brought by lawyer John Eastman that Pence could reject electors. The second will focus on the testimony of Trump's lawyers who refute that theory. The third will focus on the campaign from Trump to pressure Pence. And the fourth will focus on the dangers that still exist regarding the number of people who believe the election was rigged. And so, that has actually been increasing, the number of Americans believing the big lie that the election was stolen from Trump. So this is still an active and dangerous falsehood that is making itself felt in the politics, and certainly will be felt in the 2020 elections. And let's go back to the first January 6th hearing, and let's listen to an interview with Nick Crested, the filmmaker who presented his footage of the Proud Boys on January 5th and 6th, 2021, and testimony, and he gave testimony before the January 6th committee. So let's listen to that interview with Nick Crested.
Of those January 6th public hearings, we were joined today by documentarian Nick Crested, whose shocking and never before viewed video of the Capitol the day of the insurrection played a huge part. It was the opening act in the Select Committee's opening argument on Thursday night in primetime. The footage dealt with the violence and the coordinated multi-step efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Crested, who filmed these dramatic scenes, was embedded with the Proud Boys after Election Day and invited by them to film them up close as they went about their day on January 6th. Beyond the visual storytelling and that priceless evidence, which he's turned over to the FBI, Crested testified on Thursday about what he saw after meeting with the committee privately. He's our guest. Thank you so much for being here. What do you think the evidence that you possessed and testified to, what role do you think it plays in this story? Have you been able to, since last Thursday, sort of sit back and catch any of the hearings and try to digest what piece of the puzzle you're filling in?
Well, yeah, I mean, to set the time that they were walking away from the monument is important because it indicates that the ambition wasn't to watch the speech of President Trump. They had another agenda.
They
weren't even there.
And their agenda was what?
Well, I only followed them. I don't know what their agenda was. I mean, there's other people who can have a better idea.
What you filmed was the stacks and the intrusion, and obviously when you've seen the public testimony of the law enforcement officials, they engaged in, quote, medieval hand-to-hand combat. Was any of that foreshadowed in your time with them?
I mean, there was, when I was with them beforehand, we marched up and down the mall, which is what I thought we were going to be doing that day. I thought that I thought there was a potential for violence in the evening, that they would engage with Antifa or BLM, but I didn't see, what transpired happening.
Did they want you to continue to film them once they were engaged in violence?
So basically, once the barriers come down, it's sort of every man for themselves. And so I can see all sorts of people in my footage, whether it's Proud Boys or Oath Keepers or just Trumpers or just rioters or generally. I'm just trying to get to the point of contention and film the two sides of the argument at that point.
The timestamp that you talk about and the importance to the committee's broader story, just remind us what that is. What time is it that they arrived?
So they gathered at the mall at 10, and I picked them up at 10:30 as they're walking towards the Capitol. And this president doesn't start speaking until close to noon. So they were well away from the Capitol at that point, away from the monument at that point.
Did they ever talk about their role in being there early?
No, but they're in Eddie Block's live stream footage. Eddie Block is a Proud Boy and live streams their event. There's a Proud Boy called Milkshake who says, well, we're going to go and storm the Capitol. Nordine reminds him that's probably inappropriate language.
Inappropriate language, but not behavior. I want to just try to understand whether or not this time that they're marching, being different from the time of Donald Trump's supporters convening and witnessing the speech, and then Trump says after being told by the Secret Service that he can't go, that he'll march with them. Are they aware of Trump's movements or his supporters' movements as they're pre-positioned at the Capitol? Do they know when the speech starts and ends? Do they say his supporters are coming now?
I don't know if they're aware of Trump's movement, but everyone was aware that the joint session would start at 1 p.m. So we arrived at the Peace Circle at around 12:50, and Ryan Samsel puts his arms around Biggs at around 12:52. And the barriers went down at 12:54.
Did they reference any lawmakers as sort of waiting for them or looking for them?
When you get close to the barriers, there was some shouting about the speaker and Mike Pence. The language changed enormously from that before. There was a lot of talk of 1776 and whose streets, our streets, and where's Antifa, and they'd have riffs on that. But like once we got to the barriers, it was challenging the police, and it was becoming much more confrontational.
Do you think the violence carried out by the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, who've both been charged with seditious conspiracy, do you think this comes up again? I mean, have you been told to sort of stand by in case the committee wants to hear from you again?
I don't know if they'll be using my footage again, but we've all been told to stand by. So will it come again? I'm sure I'm going to be called for, many of the Proud Boy trials.
Oh, right, for the criminal prosecutions.
Yeah.
Does that make you uncomfortable or anxious, or is that just, what you have is the footage and they carry out their crimes?
Yeah, I just filmed their actions. So,
right.
People are saying, you could be responsible for their incarceration. I'm like, well, but their actions.
They invited you.
Yeah, their actions are incarcerating them, not my footage.
So that was an interview there with Nick Quested, the documentary filmmaker who had filmed the Proud Boys and was embedded with them on January 5th and January 6th, and whose footage is now being used as evidence in the committee hearings, the January 6th committee hearings. And so and this relationship, I should say, between Trump and neo-Nazi groups is not new, right? This isn't just within the last few years. It's Vox News did some really amazing reporting on Election Day, November 8th, 2016, interviewing neo-Nazis who support Trump. Let's listen to some of that audio now.
By and for the white Christian people of this nation.
We
have been seeing really ever since Barack Obama first won election in late 2008, growth in groups on the radical right. In 2008, we went from about 150 so-called patriot groups, anti-government radical groups, to something like 1,360 groups in 2012. In the last year, though, Donald Trump has added fuel to that fire in a very big way.
Al Gore and George Bush and people like Mitt Romney and these people, they're all the same. You know, they're all the same type of candidates. So it's pretty interesting this year to see something a little bit different. So, you know, we support those nationalist principles like closing the borders and things of that nature. So we do support those things, but we're not going to come out and endorse them.
Donald Trump wants to bring back jobs to America, give dignity to the American worker.
It's not that Trump is telling these groups what to think. They have, you know, had their own white supremacist ideology for many decades now. What Trump is doing is legitimizing.
I came here to speak on behalf of Donald Trump. I've never met the man, but I can tell that he has nothing but the best interest of this country in heart.
Some of the things that he's saying are issues that we've been tackling for years now. We talk about globalism, we talk about America first, these sort of things, bringing back American jobs. These are things that he's hitting on, so it's put a lot of our nationalism sort of becoming mainstream.
All we want is to change America back to what it was.
We do want to see whites, you know, rise and have our own state here in this country.
I do think that Trump will probably help the movement grow as a whole. We may not see that reflected at rallies, but I think we will see it reflected on the number of people who are engaging with the ideas of the white supremacist movement, whether that's electronically on the internet or in actual person in face-to-face encounters.
I mean, we are all across the country going to be watching the polling places. Where we have chapters, where we have members, we're going to be unofficially monitoring those polls in different parts of the country.
So that was reporting from November 8th, 2016, Election Day, the day that Donald Trump was elected President of the United States. And you can hear there, these are members of the National Socialist Movement, the NSM, who were gathered for a rally in the steps of the state capitol in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And at the time, the NSM, the National Socialist Movement, was America's largest neo-Nazi group. And as you heard Southern Poverty Law Center fellow Mark Patak describing the rise in these groups, you know, in 2008, we had, he says, about 150 patriot groups. And by 2012, 4 years later, you know, after the first Obama's first term in office, the number had risen to 1,360 groups. So that is a huge, like 100, more than 100 times, or about 100 times. And so
we have a caller.
We have a caller. Okay. Yeah. Please put the caller on.
Arthur.
Hi, Arthur. Welcome to Arizona.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'd like to just give some historical background. There's a lot of anti-Antifa notion. Those are anarchists. I would recommend that people read a book called Homage to Catalonia by George Orwell.
Mm.
And that book details how the anarchists were the first in line to try to destroy the Spanish dictatorship. They were the first to volunteer. But anyway, that's an aside. Let me open up the discussion a bit, please.
Sure.
First of all, those congressional hearings, by the way, your very, very disturbing art is eye-opening. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening.
All this congressional hearing stuff, it's just for show, just like the, what was it when they tried to get rid of Trump, those hearings, whatever.
The impeachment
whatever
hearing?
Those, what do they call them?
The impeachment hearings?
Yeah, those were just for show. Because you cannot, because Trump is criminally liable for that riot in the Capitol place. He's criminally liable, but they're not going to, there's no, he's like the Teflon, like most presidents. He's got that Teflon stuck to him because one out of five people voted for Trump. And if you try to put Trump in jail, there'll be a civil war in this country. It's crazy. People are crazy.
Yeah. I would have
okay,
to agree.
So,
yeah.
And that's, hold on a second. I want to make a couple more points, and I want to get your feedback on some of this. If those were all black people that had invaded the Capitol, do you think they would be treated as leniently? I mean, do you think they, the way, as far as I know, no one has yet to be prosecuted for the murder of those two policemen during the Capitol invasion. Nobody, as far as I know, no one has gone to jail for murder. Okay, so that's one couple of points. And then Congress itself is just a tool of the military-industrial complex, a big machine that eats up 51% of your tax dollar. And so I'm not sure they've any moral legitimacy as far as anything is concerned. So I'd like to get some feedback on that.
Yeah, so I really love your suggestion about reading Homage to Catalonia by George Orwell. That was his personal account of his experiences fighting in the Spanish Civil War and for the Republican Army, which was defending democracy from fascism. And of course, so it's, I do recommend reading it. I think it is pretty amazing coverage of that time period. And I would say that, it's very, for me, the hearings are important because they are documentation. They're methodical documentation of as many people, I mean, of thousands of people who have come before the committee. And so it's, and to see that and to understand that is really important. What we do with it, what we choose to do with it as an American people, that's really the question at hand, right? It's pretty evident that the Republican Party will not support any kind. I mean, there was a chance for the Republican Party has basically stopped any sort of other form of hearing on this matter at the congressional level. Mitch McConnell has made sure that did not happen, and so this is why we're having these hearings. And of course, the Republicans that are participating in it, there are just two of them, are basically going to be putting to rest their political career in the endeavor. And so that is Liz Cheney, of course, will probably not win in Wyoming her seat again. She will be ousted. And so there is a real, within the Republican Party, there is a real, they don't want to hear it, you know, and certainly they're, that is playing well with their voters. Most of their voters have actually increased their belief in the big lie that the election was stolen. In the year and a half since the January 6th insurrection. So it does really call into, I think that a lot of times the way democracy is run, we think there's this assumption that people have a very, are open to information. There was this hope that the internet would be a source of more informed political understandings, but what has happened instead is that our the human brain is certainly very small group and actually has really has a tendency towards teamism.
Well, there's going, what does he call it, going down a YouTube tunnel or something.
Yeah, the rabbit hole. Yeah, it's quite
the rabbit hole.
So and my book Standoff, I really the way I examine this phenomenon is through the issue of origin stories. Right, we often think of origin or creation stories as being something that indigenous people have, primitive people have, to quote unquote, but really that is also the case for colonial people, right? And I think it's the DNA of the colonial origin story that really makes this possible. And this is definitely a symptom of that is the fact that most of the people who vote for Trump and who support the Republican Party are white Americans. And so there's something in the concept of whiteness in this country and the history of it and the social and political structures that have actively supported it for most of the history of the United States that really lends itself to this kind of paranoia, this form of violence.
Well, look, terrorism. Look, it's on a $20 bill. I used to live in Oklahoma and all my friends were Native Americans, and that wasn't by choice. That was that's by location, okay? Good friends. And they all called Andrew Jackson. Every Indian, by the way, in Oklahoma, there are dozens of Indian tribes that were all forcibly relocated to that state. And guess what they all called Andrew Jackson? Every single tribal member, guess what they all call him? All my friends.
What do they call him?
Indian killer.
That's what
my Navajo friend Sac and Fox, little known tribe, Jim Thorpe, Cherokee Creek, all these friends of mine, they'll call that man Indian killer, and the United States puts him on a $20. What does that tell you about society, the way it's run, and what we value, literally value, with a $20 bill?
Yeah, I think that does give a lot of it. And I've actually written about the $20 bill issue in an article several years ago when they were looking at changing or, you know, putting Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. And so
humanitarian. My God.
Yeah.
Get somebody that's not a murderer. By the way, I don't know if you know the history. Andrew Jackson, after he forcibly removed a lot of those tribes, he personally took that land himself and made himself, by today's standards, a multi-billionaire.
Yeah, that is such a key, you know, in my book Standoff, I go into the whole land, the land grab that happened and the way in which, going a bit further back to the Revolutionary War, how the founding fathers were all members, were very wealthy men. They were like the 1% of their generation, and that they were all invested in land companies that wanted to speculate on Indian land that King George III would not allow them to. The King George III was forcing the English colonists to remain on the.
That's a little known chunk of history there.
Yeah. Check out my book sometime. I mean, it's I've gone through. Yeah. So thank you so much, Arthur. Going back to our different. Thank you, Arthur, for calling in. And I'd like to encourage more of you to call in to the studio to be part of this conversation. The number is 503-231-8187. So we just played some audio of Trump being supported by neo-Nazi groups on Election Day 2016. And that particular election group, that particular group, the National Socialist Movement, had a decline since they participated in the deadly riot in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017. They were sued, and this has basically reduced their membership. And we've seen that before with the Aryan Nation in northern Idaho, where once a lawsuit happens, they tend to go away because financial reasons and also because they the exposure. And this is why we haven't seen so much organized white supremacist groups marching in the streets because of lawsuits that really hit them. So they were doing more kind of covert underground sort of activities until Trump. So they were actually NSM, the leader, Jeff Shroop, their former leader, was a defendant in Sines versus Kessler civil trial, which targeted those who planned and promoted the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. And then in November 23rd, 2021, a federal court in Virginia found that Shroop and NSM, along with a slew of other defendants, guilty on charges of civil conspiracy. And so, as we'll hear, Patriot Front actually grew out of this event. They were some of the members and the organizers were part of that Charlottesville event. So the what do we know about the Patriot Front, right? And it has a very young leader. He's 23 years old. He was something like 17 or 18 during the Charlottesville rally. So this is the next generation. This is a generation that we hoped would be free of racism, right, in this country, leading us into the well into the 21st century. And so here he organized a quote little army of men with shields and other riot gear, and they were spotted near a pride parade in Idaho, and so they were charged with conspiracy to riot. Among those arrested was Thomas Ryan Rousseau. He's the leader of the Patriot Front. 31 people from 12 states were arrested and charged with conspiracy to riot. They were released, and they had logos on their hats consistent with the Patriot Front group. So they were all dressed in matching outfits and body armor. And so they were actually started as their white nationalist hate group that formed in the aftermath of the deadly Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. And they broke off of Vanguard America, which was a neo-Nazi group that participated in the demonstration, the violent and deadly demonstration, which one anti-racist demonstrator, Heather Heyer, she was murdered at this rally. And this was all to defend a freaking Confederate statue that they wanted taken down in Charlottesville. And I did visit Charlottesville. I was invited to speak at the University of Virginia in 2018, and I did visit and look at some of the other racist statues they had, and one actually honoring the brother of William Clark from Lewis and Clark. And I'm sorry, that's my dog. And so they oh my goodness. So anyway, sorry about this. Let's go ahead and play the audio about who is the Patriot Front.
Lead any reasonable officer to assume that there might be criminal activity afoot, based not only on the 911 call, but the information contained within the call.
Police say they were stuffed into a moving van, caught with shields, weapons, and at least one smoke bomb as they headed toward downtown Coeur d'Alene.
I have no doubt in my mind that had that van stopped at the park or much near the park, that we still would have ended up in a riot situation.
One by one, police unmasked the men. One of the men, police say, is their leader, Thomas Rousseau. He, along with his group Patriot Front, came from out of town and brought with them a nasty racist past, one CNN has reported on over the years.
These were members of the hate group Patriot Front. These were not Antifa in disguise, nor were they FBI members in disguise.
This group didn't just come out of nowhere. They're not new. Researchers that track hate say Patriot Front is an offshoot of a group called Vanguard America, whose alleged leader, Thomas Rousseau, attended the white supremacist Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville.
Jews will not replace us!
The person convicted of this murderous act of hate in Charlottesville, the man behind the wheel of that car, had been spotted standing side by side with the racist group holding one of their shields. Though the leadership of Vanguard America said he was not a member and condemned his violence, that didn't stop their neo-Nazi ideologies or activities, according to several groups that track hate in America. They simply splintered and rebranded themselves after the terrible publicity and legal trouble facing many who took part in the deadly Charlottesville rally.
Patriot Front sprung off of the Vanguard America as a new effort, a new brand, and so they're constantly trying to reinvent themselves to distance themselves from the very violence that they're, you know, routinely promoting.
Peter Simi is an associate professor of sociology at Chapman University. He spent decades studying extremist groups, among them neo-Nazis and white supremacists, even living with some of them. He says Patriot Front's favorite targets are immigrants, brown and black people.
Why would they, as authorities have said, target the LGBTQ segment of society?
It's a very common target for these kind of hate groups, these kind of white supremacist groups. Tend to be very homophobic, very much seeing this either in biblical terms as in terms of homosexuality being a sin against God, or for those that are not religiously oriented, they'll see it in more biological, secular terms in terms of seeing it as unnatural.
This town has been through an invasion of hate-filled men before. The county was home to the leader of the Aryan Nations, who had worldwide gatherings here until the town decided to fight back. Their fight to remove racist hate from their town resulted in some of the toughest state hate crime laws in the country.
We're not going back to the days of the Aryan nations.
Sarah Seidner joins us now. Is it clear whether this group wanted to cause violence and actually hurt people physically or so chaos and disruption? I mean, they were like all loaded into U-Haul with shields and I mean, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, I mean, there were no guns, but there were things that could be used as weapons. And police said there was at least one smoke bomb there as well. Those aren't generally things you do when you're protesting peacefully. But the police are pretty clear that what they had with them, all dressed in similar outfits, that their plan was to create some sort of chaos. Whether or not it was going to be violent or not, that remains to be seen. But certainly they are being charged now, all 31 of them, with conspiracy to riot. It is a misdemeanor. We did try to reach out. None of them had attorneys on file. And we tried to reach out to the family of the alleged leader, Thomas Russo. And he and his family did not return any of our attempts at getting comment from them. But it certainly has rattled this town. I mean, as we walked around, we went to the hotel where we believe they were standing outside of, and people were upset that their town, once again, after fighting for so long to try and show people that this is a wonderful place to live and to be, they were going to have a pride parade, they were doing all sorts of things for Pride Month, that they are now being in the news again for something that has to do with hatred. Something, by the way, most of these men were not even from Idaho, only about three of them, the rest of them from all over the country.
Sarah Seidner, I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that was Sarah Seidner being interviewed on Anderson Cooper about the Patriots front and their sort of their history. They basically justify their ideology of hate and intolerance under the guise of preserving the ethnic and cultural origins of its members' European ancestors. As mentioned before, the founder, Thomas Russo, is very young. He's 23 now, and he operates, apparently, this whole operation out of his father's home in suburban Dallas. And so we can assume that his parents support this. The group manifesto claims that those in America who are not of European ancestry are not truly American. So the goal is explicitly white supremacy and a white ethno state. They are quoted as saying an African may have lived, worked, and even been classed as a citizen in America for centuries, yet he is not American. He is, as he likely prefers to be labeled, an African in America. I do have to say a lot of Black Americans I know don't like the term African American because of that very notion, and so they also say the website says the same rule applies to others who are not of the founding stock of our people. Founding stock is very interesting, or do not share the common unconscious that permeates throughout our greater civilization and the European diaspora. So this is an explicitly white supremacist group, and. And Russo, I know it's ironic that he has the same surname as the great French philosophical thinker who supported the exact opposite of what he supports. But he's been writing about this since, you know, even in his high school newspaper. He wrote a conservative column there. Much of his columns have been deleted now from the school's paper. So this is a big thing. I mean, they are they have marched in other places. In fact, they marched at Independence Hall in Philadelphia last summer, July 4th, 2021. Let's listen to some of the reporting from that.
Groups believe the Patriot Front marched through the city of Philadelphia because this is the birthplace of our country, and the growing voice of white nationalist groups has many people in our area concerned.
This is video from Patriot Front's website as an estimated 150 members armed with flags marched through Center City this past weekend.
To be honest, I was scared. I was like, you know, I don't, like, what the hell is going on? You know, I felt like we were back in the 60s or something.
Sean Bass performs overnight security at the federal courthouse. He watched as the group marched on Independence Mall.
They were walking. They were in unison, like a standard military formation, just marching, singing the cadence, saying, take back what's ours, reclaim America.
According to anti-hate groups, Patriot Front was formed in 2017 by Thomas Rousseau, a young man from Dallas, Texas, who uses a heavy hand to control the group's messaging and activity. Prior to forming the group, he was connected to Vanguard America, which gained infamy after the deadly white nationalist protest in Charlottesville, Virginia.
He split off from that group in the aftermath of the rally because of concerns over the optics of the event.
Cassie Miller is with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups. She calls Patriot Front arguably the leading white supremacist group in the country, with 42 chapters, including here in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. The group has also posted propaganda in Delaware.
And they believe that the country needs to go through a chaotic rebirth to be restored to some mythical, racially pure past.
Miller says Patriot Front recruits on college campuses with flyers, conducts flash protests, and even vandalism. The group uses encrypted chat rooms to communicate, and there's an extensive vetting process to join.
They profess deeply anti-Semitic, racist, and hateful.
Joanna Mendelson ideology is with the Anti-Defamation League. She believes the group chose to protest in Philadelphia because of its patriotic and historic significance. She says Patriot Front moved away from its neo-Nazi roots in 2018 and began using a more patriotic message, but warns.
What we've seen in the most recent years is that white supremacists attempt to sugarcoat their messages, making it more palatable and acceptable to a mainstream audience.
The group's protest here in Philadelphia was short-lived. Citizens ran them off to their cargo trucks. Still, the brief display of hate left some, like Bass, saddened and frustrated.
I know it exists, but I try to overlook it. I try to ignore it, but something like that, you just can't ignore.
No one was injured or arrested during the protest. Attempts to reach Rousseau and the Patriot Front were unsuccessful. On Independence Mall, Chad Perdelli, Channel 6.
So that was reporting from July 4th, 2021, last year, when they appeared marching as you saw them. They actually came in the same thing. They came in U-Haul trucks and marching identical outfits, you know, shouting their things like, you know, I think they do the same sort of slogans you heard at Charlottesville, which is like, you will not replace us, you know, blood and soil, which are explicitly Nazi actual slogans. And, you know, they are, as they noted, comparatively young and members of Patriot Front. And their central tactic are these flash demonstrations, privately planned, unannounced events that allow the group to promote its beliefs while limiting the risk of individual exposure, negative media coverage, arrest, and public backlash. You heard there in Philadelphia, they were actually driven out by the citizens of Philadelphia, drove them back into their U-Haul vans. And so, they declined to actually work with in large rallies with other hate groups since Charlottesville, and prefer to work in these small local chapters. So they are trying to basically encourage violence in our streets. They definitely believe in the, or subscribe to, the replacement theory, which is that a false narrative put forward by white nationalist groups that the white population is being replaced. And so that is very concerning. And but once again, I would like to enjoy you to take part in this conversation. This is a really quite troubling topic, I realize, and a lot of the topics we bring up here on American Standoff are. But it's really important we engage them and understand, because if you listen to that that reporting that Fox News did back in 2016 on Election Day, you can hear the neo-Nazi leaders talking about going to monitor election sites, and this was 6 years ago, right? And they're planning on doing this on a much larger scale in the 2022 elections. So we need to be aware of that as well, that it's that this is not only are they running many of these far-right candidates who believe in the big lie and other really noxious theories, like the replacement theory, quite frankly, they are they will be monitoring our elections and trying to stop. And in fact, I know I remember that just recently, I think in I think in New Mexico, a county commissioner refused to certify a primary vote just recently, and so that's sort of the first example of that happening right now, and it will be happening at every count on the county level, at every level of the elections. So this upcoming election will be unlike any we've ever seen before. There will be a full-out assault on people's right to vote going on. And so please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And what do you think of this present state of affairs, and how can we, what can we do about it? How can we prevent this all-out assault on democracy? So I wanted to actually, only 10 minutes left, but let's look at the analysis of the growth of these organized white supremacist groups. As I mentioned before, this sort of organized group sort of went away with a series of lawsuits and other sorts of things that made it difficult. They made it not their preferred sort of form of action. So let's listen to an interview with law enforcement analyst Jim Kavanaugh.
Where it was what I call the apparatus of organized hate. We actually infiltrated Ku Klux Klan claverns because they were organized. They would march. They would do things together, try to disrupt events together. Neo-Nazis did that also. And then we saw a seminal change in that in 1992 when the Klan, Nazis, anti-government militias met in Estes Park, Colorado, and one of their most infamous members, Louis Beam, posited out the leaderless resistance model, which we then saw take hold in the movement. And that was more along the lines of, you know, just one or two people need to go out and act on their own without specific direction from the, you know, the Grand Wizard or the head of the Nazi party. This would shield them from federal prosecution is what they believed. So we kind of went with that. They went with that strategy for years. But they're so emboldened now, Julian, they're so emboldened, new groups like Patriot Front, they're not afraid to get in a group, get in a gang, you know, load in a U-Haul truck, show up, and they would have made a major physical assault on the Pride Day. I mean, that's what they were doing. That's what they were geared for. That's why they have their masks. That's why they have their, you know, their really uniforms. I mean, the khakis and the face masks, all their uniforms. Look how they all look all the same. They're working as an organized unit. And we're starting to see that more. We saw it in Charlottesville. It was unbelievable to see all the neo-Nazis with the torches. So we're in a different stage in America. January 6th certainly was, an attempt to overthrow the government, which is all these guys ever talk about for the last 50 or 60 years. That was their reason for living.
When you mentioned that they're working as an organized unit, and something that struck me was the charge here, which is a conspiracy to riot. That's not a charge, you know, I think that most folks hear every day. What can you tell us about the use of that charge of conspiracy to riot? Is that becoming more common in your experience?
Well, what it is, Julian, is smart prosecutors. Look, the cases we always went for were the conspiracies. In the United States federal system, under the federal law, a conspiracy is basically when two or more people agree to commit a crime against the United States, and then they commit an overt act, which means some kind of physical act in furtherance of the conspiracy. And so then the act of one becomes the act of all. So if five of us got in a room to say we were going to rob the bank, we all agreed we were going to do it. We made an agreement to commit a crime against the United States, rob the bank. We sent one guy out to steal a car and another guy out to get a gun. Once they did that, once they got the gun and they got the car, then all of us in the room that made the agreement were all guilty of conspiracy to rob the bank, and everybody could be charged equally and do the same prison term. So it's a very, very powerful charge to stop organized criminal groups. People talk about the RICO case. Yes, that sometimes comes into play when it's very deeply involved in a lot of activity over time. But just a straight conspiracy charge, state or federal, is very, very powerful. The prosecutors are smart to charge it because basically what it means is the act of one person is the act of all the persons who are involved in that agreement. And some of them may not even have been in the truck. Some of them could be in states and, you know, all over the U.S. who agreed to do a crime. And so there can be more arrests coming after this.
So anyway, so that was some reporting on the growth of these organized white supremacist groups and how that has changed over the years from Jim Kavanaugh, who actually worked in sort of infiltrating the KKK. And so once again, thank you for listening. We are down to our last 6 minutes. So if you would like to call in, please do. The number here is 503-231-8187. And I actually also meant to include audio from an amazing Frontline series documenting hate, New American Nazis, which came out back in 2018 and was a result of reporting done about Charlottesville and stuff. And so it's a very good series to watch. You know, there they document the period where the white power movement went underground and where they're still very active, making bombs, in fact even planning to fire a mortar at a nuclear power plant off the coast of Florida. So these attacks that they're planning to destabilize and create to stabilize our society and then to move in with the revolution. As Kavanaugh was saying, it's been something they've been planning for 50 years. And a lot of this is a response to the civil rights movement. And so this is an ongoing problem and these threats. And they are actively recruiting military members as well. And so that is a really serious concern. A lot of studies have shown that a lot of these far-right groups do have members, an enormous number of members from both law enforcement and also the military. And so there's been a lot of leaks done with getting a lot of information. There was a ProPublica in early 2018 obtained 250,000 encrypted chat logs from members of the group Adam Waffen Division, which is a really scary group, and they were founded around 2015, and they are international as well. I mean, there are members who are part. One of the members was actually deported from Ukraine, and actually there was just an arrest recently, a raid in Quebec City in Canada of members of this neo-Nazi group that just happened, being reported on today, and so this is an evolving situation. It's quite a scary one, and although a lot of these groups don't have conflicting ideologies, right? I think that they disagree on certain things. They are to a certain extent working together. And if you tie this back to, you know, when I covered the Bundys in Standoff, when they had the takeover of Malheur in February 2016 of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge here in Oregon, they did get some support from the Three Percenters and other militia groups that came out, and certainly a lot of the politicians like Matt Shea, former state representative of Washington State from the Spokane area, and these very far right folks who did come out and support them in person and continue to support these groups. Another thing I would recommend listening to, and I have mentioned this before, is the Bundyville podcast put together by Celia Sotil, and particularly the second season of the podcast. The first season goes into a lot of things that happened with the Bundys, but the second season really goes into the history and the growth and an incredible amount of detail I've not seen anywhere else of these far right groups in Stevens County, Washington, and also around Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And you know, the Aryan Nation was bankrupted and put out of business, but there still remain these other groups, and they are she has some amazing audio that was smuggled from these meetings where you can hear them speaking plainly about these things in a way that they don't speak in front of people who are not members of their group. And so I think that being in the Pacific Northwest, it's really important that we take a look at this. It's not something we want to take a look at, but you know, we've seen these groups come through Portland. We've seen them, really try to stir up violence. You know, the Patriot Prayer folks that marched through Portland even before the pandemic, and where these people are at now. And so, but thank you so much. I'm at the last minute here. So once again, I'm Jacqueline Keeler, and I'm thank you for listening again for another episode of American Standoff. And I hope that we can begin to really change this and make an America that is not based in white supremacist domestic terrorism. I think that's a small thing to want and a very necessary thing. Thank you so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.